Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. I hope you're doing well. It's another week, it's another episode. And this is the first episode that I have recorded remotely. I'm recording this in the thick of the lockdown. And I was meant to have recorded this a while ago with my guest today, who's singer-songwriter Rachel Mason. And it never got to happen due to the lockdown. So we facilitated this via the means of Skype and two audio recorders. So you should still get exactly the same audio quality as usual. There's no buts. That's it. Before we get on with the episode, I should like to say thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces podcast. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. And if you enjoy this, then be aware that I put out weekly podcasts over on our Patreon page. So Off the Beaten Track has a Patreon, and there's lots of stuff goes up on there each week. So if you want to support the podcast a little more, you can go over and get involved on Patreon. That's patreon.com/offthebeatentrack. You can find out about merchandise and everything else on offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. I think we can get on with the episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Rachel Mason. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. It's a glorious sunny day, and it's the first of many, I hope, that I'm recording remotely. We're currently in the middle of the lockdown, and I've been talking to my guest for a while now about getting this one up and running. She was due to come into the studio in Shoreditch, but for obvious reasons, we're all now sitting at home. But we've made it happen, and so my guest today is Rachel Mason.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, yes, like you said, the sun's shining, thankfully. It's a weird time at the moment, but thankfully we have music to get through it. Don't know what we'd do without
exactly
at the moment.
So how are you finding this current situation that we find ourselves in?
A bit tricky. I'm naturally an extrovert, and I really like seeing people and creating music and teaching singing and stuff. So it's really weird just being our family at home all the time, which is nice, but it's it's strange. It's a strange environment, and not knowing how people are doing. And you know, I want to check on my friends, so we just FaceTime a lot just to check we're okay. And and just hoping all my other freelance musician friends are all right, because it's a strange time, particularly for people in the arts. So yeah, it's tricky.
Massively. I mean, it's. But what I do think will come out of this, which I think's really exciting and positive. I mean, not making any light of this awful situation that we're in. But I do think that there's so many musicians, podcasters, DJs, you know, people that own pubs, clubs, you know, licensed venues that are now currently closed and unable to. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's people in all sorts of businesses that are currently out of work. But what I think it's pushing in the creative industries is people to rethink how they do their things.
Yeah.
And coming up with new and interesting ideas. And I think it's been really, really encouraging to look on social media and to look at websites and seeing so many artists sort of, you know, and I love to use the term thinking outside of the box, but doing that and coming up with really exciting ways to, you know, perform their art or create something. So I've been very, very impressed with that. But
definitely.
All right, well, look, Rachel, I always start the podcast with track one. So can you tell me, please, the song with the greatest ever intro?
Now, this was quite an easy one for me, because it's the song we named our daughter after. So my favourite intro is the original Derek and the Dominoes version of Layla. So, we called our daughter Layla after the song.
Oh, that's quite bizarre, because I have a daughter called Layla as well.
Oh, it's the best name. Is she also named after the song?
Well, it wasn't. No, I mean, what was? It's loosely based around a song. The track "Lila" by Oasis was number one, and so it was inspired by that. So tell me. I mean, what we should also do before we start sort of discussing the track Layla is to kind of, for those that aren't aware of your work, to give them a kind of brief insight into what you do.
Okay, so I'm a kind of freelance musician. I do lots of things, really. I'm a wearer of many hats, is it that way. I run an artist management business called Listening Colour, where I work with unsigned young artists who need a bit of support in the music industry, and I am a songwriter. I work with lots of different artists, some big pop stars, some more kind of local people, and I run a community choir, which is brilliant fun, and I teach singing, and I do a bit of TV work, judged a show on Sky One, which was awesome because I got to work with Midge Ure, who is just amazing. So that was pretty cool. And I do quite a lot of work abroad, working with different vocal groups. And I do quite a bit for... I'm really lucky that I get to do some things for charity as well. So there's a charity called Wellchild, who I'm an ambassador for. And I get to work with the amazing young choirs that come through there, and I get to meet Prince Harry and Meghan Markle every year, so that's nice working with them.
Lovely. Going back to intros, and obviously the intro to Layla's very, very iconic. It's, you know, it's that guitar lick that just sets the sort of premise for the whole song. But as somebody that is a songwriter for both yourself and other people, and I'm just interested to know, I ask this question to most artists that are songwriters that I've had on this podcast, is how maybe the way that you approach intros has changed over the years in regards to how people now listen to music against how maybe they did a few years
ago. Yeah, that's quite interesting, because it's a lot of things aren't especially live music anymore. A lot of them are kind of created in computers and things like that. So it's really interesting working with live musicians, and particularly I'm not a great guitarist by any means, but I work with quite a lot of people who are fantastic guitarists, and they just noodle around and come up with these amazing ideas, and quite often it inspires the whole rest of the song. Then you wouldn't have thought of that idea if they hadn't played that little riff. So it's really interesting in how it can pull you into a track in a way that music doesn't. Well, music does still pull you into the track, but in a very different way. Quite often it's the kind of vibe or the kind of beat or something. But yeah, so things can be quite different nowadays.
Do you consider radio when you're writing?
Yeah, very much so. The kind of 3.5 minute song, get in, get out kind of thing.
Is that still a real thing?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, there's people like Radiohead that break the rules because, you know, it's Radiohead. But generally, that's what, when you're writing for kind of commission, or you're writing to kind of answer an advert that somebody wants, it's usually best to go with that, because you know radio stations are going to play it, because, you know, the problems Queen had with Bohemian Rhapsody, that they couldn't get it on air because it was just too weird. People didn't know what to do with it because it was too long. So you're already off to a winner, I guess, if it's a kind of little bite-sized song. So I think people generally still do abide by that rule and try and get to the chorus by the end of the first 30 seconds or something. So sometimes you have to do quite a short intro, because otherwise it can eat into your time.
You do see quite a common trend now of people starting songs with the chorus now.
Yeah,
you know, it's like some of, you know, but and I do think that, you know, being the age that I am, I have such an affinity to the kind of, you know, the 80s pop music, you know, the synth pop stuff that was so hook inducing and melodic. But what I'm seeing now with like bands like, even like bands like Bring Me the Horizon and the 1975, like just high end pop. It's like it's really well produced pop music, and just that the sort of, you know, and I guess both of them bands probably will get thrown into other categories as well. But it's really interesting seeing that kind of crossover now of, you know, whether, you know, Bring Me the Horizon being traditionally a kind of rock metal band, and obviously 1975 being what I guess you'd call an indie band, and just seeing that their production is just got that pop sheen to it now. It's just opened it up to completely new audiences. Just funky. I think it's really interesting that how pop music's being put together nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. It's how exciting. You know, we can listen to it in loads of different formats, and people love going on Spotify and listening to things, and things are on YouTube, and people are always looking for new bands to listen to. And I guess it's, you know, because like different radio stations can be quite niche and only want to play particular things. So if it's got more of a general pop vibe, it's probably going to get more airplay in general, I would think. So it's interesting how, bands I never thought would do that are now doing that. But I'm like, makes sense.
Okay, so Rachel, for track two, I ask guests the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Yeah, I think I thought about this quite a lot, because I was like, God, there's loads. Because I have a weird thing called synesthesia, that means I can hear, I see music as colours and I can taste it as well. So that's a weird thing I've always had, which I assumed everybody else had, because like when you're a child, you just think you're normal until you realise when you say, oh, that song's purple, people go, what? And my parents used to listen to, they used to make little tapes when we used to go up to visit family in London at Christmas, and Dad used to put one of his various tapes on, and it was always like random Christmas stuff. But one of the songs in there on that tape was Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush, and came out a few years before I was born. But I remember the first time I heard her voice, I said, who's this? Because it sounded nothing like anything else on that tape. And there were some great things on the tape, but it was this almost like unearthly, angelic voice. And she just had so much artistry with it. It was almost like listening to an opera, but as a pop song. And then I got really, I was just fascinated with her and how she used her voice like as an instrument, and told this incredible story. And it's just, I just always found her an absolutely incredible and unique artist. And I'm pretty sure she's influenced the way I sing, because I'm also a soprano and have quite a light, ethereal voice. So I'm nowhere near as good as Kate, but I'm sure that's influenced me quite strongly, actually, the way that I write and the way that I sing. And it's just gorgeous, that song.
It really is, and I think like there must still be an abundance of people that hear that for the first time and literally think, "What is this?" Because it is like sonically like nothing else.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's so. I mean, two questions: what colour is it, and what does it taste like?
Which are weird questions. That one, to me, everybody has. So if you ask Pharrell Williams, because he also has it, not that I know him personally, but he also has it, he would probably tell you it's a different colour. That one to me feels quite like a foresty green, quite a deep green. It's quite angsty, isn't it? It's quite a even her vocal is so beautiful and clean and clear. It's actually the story is very heavy and dark. I tend to get a weird thing when I mostly get the taste of music when I'm writing with someone, and when the song's going really well and it feels like it's going to be really good, it tastes like steak. So people often say to me, how's this going, Rach? Does it taste like steak? And I'm like, yeah, it's steak. So that's a steaky one. That tastes like steak.
I have never heard of that before. What did you say it was called?
Or synesthesia, it can be called. It's basically, apparently, everybody used to be able to do this, used to have these connections between our taste, sound and sight and hearing and everything. But it's something, it's like our appendix, like things that have become useless in our bodies, so we've sort of phased it out over time.
Yeah.
So now only a few people have it, and it's not a particularly, it's like a superpower, but a really rubbish one, because you can't like fly or anything. You know, it's sort of rubbish superpower.
I would love to know what my record collection tastes like.
Well, some people have it like when they, days of the week taste like things. And so if they hear two things together, it tastes like, one thing tastes like mustard and the other one tastes like marmalade, they can be really sick because the two taste together, come together in their mouth. I don't get that, but I know some people who do.
Wow.
And that must be a bit horrible. It's a really odd thing, but it's pretty cool. I love having that with music. It's like an extra sense in a way. It's nice.
Completely. So for track three, Rachel, I asked people to tell me the song that reminds them of their time at school.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, there was so much, because I started school in the kind of early 90s, so there was all of the kind of 90s pop stuff. And but the thing that I really got into proper music, that's a bit offensive to pop music. Pop music's great, but I got I met a group of friends who in the kind of GCSE sixth form kind of time, and they all preferred kind of American grunge and that kind of thing. And I remember the first time I heard Alive by Pearl Jam, I just thought, oh my God, this is incredible. And it's just so dark and beautifully sung, and the story's unusual. And I just thought, okay, I love this. And that's when we were all learning to drive. So we all used to have these crappy little cars, or our parents' ones that we borrow, and try and make it look a bit more exciting rather than a Vauxhall Corsa. And we drive around with the windows down, listening to Pearl Jam. And it just reminds me of that time.
Brilliant.
Of kind of
brilliant
freedom, and watching MTV and just watching all of the stuff, like Live was one of the bands that I loved then, and Soundgarden are my favourite bands of all time, and we just absolutely love that era. Just still, I think, always my favourite.
Yeah, there was lots of girls at that age that seemed to enjoy watching Eddie Vedder on MTV around then. He was quite a good looking boy, wasn't he?
Chris Cornell was always my favourite. My dog is named after Chris Cornell. He's called Cornell after an Audio Slave song. So we have lots of weird musical things in our family. But
wonderful. And obviously the track. Are you familiar with the track Hunger Strike?
Yes.
From Temple of the Dog, which is obviously Eddie and Chris singing on that. What a great record that is.
Absolutely. They did so much amazing stuff, yeah.
So where was school? Where was you born?
I was born in just outside London. And then we lived there till I was about 3. And then my parents decided they didn't want to raise me in London. So we moved down to the West Country. So we're about 20 minutes outside Bristol, kind of, like Somerset, kind of Wurzel's country kind of thing. And I've lived there since I was 3. And then my sister was born when we were here. And so I grew up going to school, just a normal comprehensive school down the road, which was a really good musical school, actually. Some really cool stuff's come out of there. And they were always really encouraging of you writing your own stuff and performing it and having pop groups. And they were...
Oh, really?
Yeah, Churchill Academy. They were... I had brilliant, the music staff there were just incredible. There was one particular teacher who led our a cappella group. And I was an awful a cappella singer, but she let me in. I think she took pity on me and trained me to actually sing properly in tune on a harmony part, because I was always like, I'm a soprano, I can't do a harmony. And she taught me to do that. And she would do the coolest stuff with us. We do Radiohead. We did part of Paranoid Android. And so it wasn't the kind of cheesy a cappella do what stuff. It was awesome things. So she had an amazing, just fantastic taste in music. And we did loads of, she basically introduced me to Jeff Buckley and like just really amazing things. And I was, so she was brilliant influence. And it was, a great school for musicians to be at.
And to be so close to Bristol, did you get to experience some of the exciting stuff that was coming out of Bristol in the sort of early 90s with Massive and Portishead?
Yeah, so we live really near Portishead. Lots of my friends live there, and Massive Attack. And, they often play sort of like the Downs Festival and things now. So I was a bit young to go to their gigs. My parents would have just been like, no, you're a little bit young. But I was, absolutely loved them. I still love Massive Attack. It was always like a toss-up between Teardrop, Massive Attack and the Pearl Jam song for my school one, because that just Teardrop is just such a absolute banger from my childhood. And I performed it in New York as well with a show choir I was with, and it was just it's just this iconic, beautiful song. And
I think there's you can see I can feel a comparison and hear a comparison between Liz Fraser
and Kate Bush.
You know, there is that beautiful ethereal sort of sound in their voice, which is like no
absolutely.
One else.
And
really.
She lives really near Liz Fraser. She's still quite nearby, but she's so shy that she because bizarrely, I was teaching a really lovely young girl teaching her singing, and her best friend is Elizabeth Fraser's daughter, and who is the baby who's in the Teardrop, sort of the baby in the Teardrop video, because it's not really a real baby, but that is
she was
pregnant.
Yeah.
And I was like, which is so weird. I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, oh, I'd love to meet her. And I said, she doesn't really do people. She just sort of, she's so kind of shy, which is absolutely fair enough. That's completely up to her. But
And it's weird you mention
Jeff Buckley, because she just found out he died.
Obviously,
that the day she made that recording.
Well, Well, yeah, and oh, I didn't know that. I was going to say, obviously, like one of her most infamous songs is Song of the Siren, which is obviously Jeff's dad, Tim Buckley's composition. So, tell me more about that. So she'd found out that Jeff Buckley died the day, apparently,
and I can't remember where I read this now, but she was apparently in the studio just about to record the vocals for Teardrop, and she found out that Jeff had just drowned. And
a lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And then she recorded the vocals, so the vocals are kind of like drenched in that kind of sorrow as well. When I think about it, I'm like, yeah, that totally makes sense. So I can't remember where I read that, but I definitely read it at some point. Unless it came to me in a dream, which would be a very strange dream. But there's always weird musical links, and quite often people who are incredible musicians are so influential that they sort of touch these lives that, you know, don't really seem connected, but they all kind of influence each other. And
completely.
It's just, yeah, amazing.
So what did you want to be when you was at school?
Definitely a singer. I'm a bit sort of dyslexic-y with numbers and things. I find numbers really hard. And luckily, singers only have to really count to four. So, you know, we don't really have to do a lot of the numbers. And singers, actually, when you're singing with an orchestra, all my orchestral friends say, well, don't you count? And I'm like, no, you just listen to whatever's got the tune when you haven't got the tune, then you come back in again. That's what singers do.
Of course. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I mean, the dyslexia is going to get overlooked on your CV when people find out that you can smell and taste music.
I feel like God made a bit of an error there. Like, maybe being able to actually do some maths would be useful, but I've got an accountant, so it's okay. So I wrote my tax return. But I'd always written songs since I was little. That was quite normal for me, just to have songs in my head. And you just, yeah.
Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off The Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side.
So did you come from a musical background? Were your parents musical?
Sort of. My dad was in the Wandsworth Boys Choir, which were quite a famous school choir. So they performed with Pavarotti. They used to do the proms most years. They were like the boys choir in the proms, and they did quite a few of Benjamin Britten's opera recordings, so we've got some of his dad's recordings. He's in the choir. It's not a solo, but so he grew up doing that. And he'd always loved music, and my mum played piano and things. There's music in the family, but neither of them were particularly, you know, like a famous musician or something. But they'd always encouraged it. And my mum had always put music on things like Albatross and said, "What? Close your eyes. What does that sound like to you? What does it? What can you see?" Like, she'd always do that. So I'd always experience music as a kind of multi-sensory...
Mum, for some reason, I can play steak.
And there started my love for Fleetwood Mac. So, well, most things that Lindsay Buckingham does is steak, so that's, you know, easy peasy. But yeah, of so I was always around music and just loved it, just really interested, and started taking piano lessons when I was 4, and just loved it. And I think from that point on, I feel like my life's been quite easy in that way, that I've just always known what I wanted to do. And I wasn't good at lots. It wasn't like I was amazing at everything and then had to kind of narrow it down. I was good at music and some other things like English, but I was awful at maths and science. And I've married someone with a physics degree, so I feel like he balances out our children. So hopefully they'll get his maths and science skills.
Exactly. So... Mm-hmm. For track 4, Rachel, the first song you remember buying from a record
shop.
Yeah,
I remember. Gosh, that was the 80s. Yeah, so CDs had been out, but they were still quite expensive. So I remember going to, would it have been R Price maybe, or some one of those then, with my dad, and we bought Thriller. And I was just obsessed with Michael Jackson at that time. And we were friends at school, and we'd used to make anything into a Michael Jackson lyric. And, like, we just didn't launch into "Leave me alone, girl," like, all the time. And our teachers would be like, "Oh, be quiet." And it's just such an iconic album. And some of his greatest tracks are on there and there. And it was the kind of the MTV time where you'd try and watch. We didn't have MTV, but my aunt somehow had recorded this video jukebox thing off the TV and sent us a video of it, and it had Thriller, Beat It, Billie Jean, all of the kind of the amazing dance routines, and then we always try and copy the dance routines, which I am not very good at. Some hideous footage of us as children trying to try to replicate it. But yeah, I just remember that album, and it was just, he was so famous then. He was just, yeah, it was amazing.
I recently, like 2 nights ago, watched a documentary on him, and I mean, for, you know, I guess we separate the art, yeah, from the man in these times, you know. That, you know, I guess nothing's been proved right or wrong in any way, shape or form, but I don't know. It's a tricky one to kind of where the land lies with that. But what I think we can safely say is that the musical output was, yes, phenomenal, and never more so than for me on Thriller. Yeah. I think it's one of if not the greatest pop album that's ever been recorded, and just. I mean, just the impact of his style, you know, he looked incredible at that point. And unfortunately, the documentary I watched the other night was all about the different procedures he'd had on his face. And oh my God, it's like when you see it all sort of put together in, like, cut together really quickly, just how he had changed in sort of less than 20 years. It's absolutely bananas. But I think, shut your eyes and you hear that voice, and it's just, for me, never more so than on Can You Feel It?
Yes.
When, like, you've got all the Jackson brothers have all got great voices and they're all singing, and when he says "people of the world," whatever it is, "are the people of the..." His voice is just 100 times better than every other Jackson. It just projects way above anything else on that record. Sonically, his voice is insanely
absolutely
amazing.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And he had this kind of grit in his voice as well. For someone with such a fantastically high falsetto, to have that kind of grit in there as well is quite unusual. And that's
exactly what makes it that grit.
Bruno Mars sounds similar to Michael Jackson, but doesn't have that grit. He's got the clean, beautiful kind of top end. And it's just he's just incredible, and the way Thriller was written, because they wrote the tune and they didn't have, they had the da 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 da, but they didn't know which words they were going to put with it. So they originally had sunshine, which does not have the same impact. And apparently they went through the dictionary until they got to
no.
thriller. They went all the way through the dictionary until they got to the word thriller. And then they were
wow.
like, yeah, that's the word. And then the whole song kind of, yeah, was not about sunshine anymore. It was suddenly about very dark
wow.
things.
And them zombies in the video, them zombies in the video, they're not no. into sunshine.
They used to scare the absolute living daylight. They used to put that on in the 80s as a school treat. And people, kids would be like wetting themselves. It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, school treat. Yeah.
It was like that. It was like, it was so rare. Like, you know, we had like one mate at school that had yeah. Thriller on VHS, and like the making of yeah. Thriller as well. And like, and we'd all sort of like
go round. You
know, race round his house on our bikes in our lunch break just to watch the making of Thriller.
Yeah, isn't it? It's just incredible. Brilliant. And they'd never shot music videos like that. The dancers were used to just rocking up, learning the routine, cracking on with it. But Mike was like, no, we're going to be yeah. here for a week. You need to. Whoa. Just, yeah, it's just, I don't think there's really ever been anything like it since then.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, I'm not comparing him to like that closely, but I never got to see Michael Jackson live, unfortunately. My wife saw him on various tours, and when he passed, they put on the Dangerous tour. I think it's in Japan or something, and it's perfection. It's absolutely perfection. But last year, I did go and see Bruno Mars in Hyde Park, and I'm not necessarily a huge Bruno Mars fan. I only really know
the big hits,
the singles that get played on the radio. Yeah. And it was one of the most exciting gigs I've seen. It was incredible. It was like it was pure pop, but it was done so well. And he was playing various instruments. He was singing. He can dance like Michael Jackson. You know, his dancing was amazing, and you know, he's a talented boy. You know, he's a very talented lad. He's Bruno Mars, and yeah, it was probably the closest thing to seeing Jackson or Prince, I think, is to see Bruno Mars.
I think you're right. Yeah, and it's I was always too young to go and see Michael Jackson, but I know people who did go, and that's like, oh, that would have been amazing seeing.
Seeing
the Dangerous tour or Bad or back in the day.
It's really weird, like, when you look back and you, and because I'm always fascinated as to like who supports who, like, you know, who was the support acts, and when you look back at like the Bad tour and stuff like that and Dangerous, and you just think, all right, who supported Michael Jackson? Because he was the biggest artist in the world at that point, without a shadow of a doubt. So the supports must have been amazing. They were shit. It was like, I think it was like, one of them, it was Criss Cross.
With their one song.
Exactly. And then with another artist with one song, right. Rosala. And, I mean, she's got a few more hits, I guess, but Kim Wilde.
Okay. Like, that's odd. Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't have been struggling with a mortgage. I mean, he could have maybe forked out a couple more quid and had someone a little bit better.
Him, were they, like, to be quite honest? You didn't need to.
Never. Exactly.
It's like having unattractive bridesmaids to make the bride look prettier. He didn't need that. He didn't need that.
He was always going to win. Okay, Rachel, for track five, let's move forward after school, and I want to know the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Oh yeah, now this is quite tricky because I went to Cardiff to do my music degree. And so all of my housemates were into quite like clubby kind of, you know, went to Liquid and drank WKD and that kind of classic stuff. And so it was all like the standard pop stuff, and dance music was in the charts. But there was this brilliant club in Cardiff called Metros that was quite stinky and gross, but it played heavy metal and grunge and ska. And so whenever my friends came up to visit, we always went there. And and then, yeah, some of my friends at their unis had, like, rock and indie nights, so we'd always go there. And so we listened to a lot of grunge, particularly Soundgarden, who were my kind of favourite band. And Spoon Man always just reminded me of, like, just leaping around in leather trousers, loads of eyeliner at these these clubs. And and just having a great time. There was loads of Rage Against the Machine and that kind of thing there. But yeah, I love Spoon Man as well because it's relatively uplifting for grunge, and with a spoon solo and all their kind of unusual rhythms that Soundgarden had. And yeah, I just love that song. It always makes me feel kind of happy and like I want to just jump around and have a bit of a mosh.
Yeah. So being in Cardiff, I mean, was that like the sort of early to mid 90s around the time of sort of Soundgarden and Rage, or was these?
It was more retrospective because I was, it was more like 2000 and 2003, so it was a bit after them.
Right, okay.
But yeah, they were still playing all that. They had Scar Nights on Tuesday, so it was loads of madness and weird things like that.
Wonderful. So was you also, was you going to gigs then? Was Club Either Back happening? Was you going to watch?
Yeah, we went to do quite a lot. I really liked Counting Crows at the time, so we saw Counting Crows a few times. They're interesting to watch live because they don't play anything the same as on the album at all. And if you want to listen to August and everything after, don't go to the gig because it's not, they don't play, they never play Anna Begins anyway. They just never do it. But they
But they always do like a 15-minute version of Raining in Baltimore.
Just play Anna Begins. But it's great.
He really wants a raincoat.
He was very drunk at one gig that I went to in Hyde Park, and Adam Duritz and he fell off a speaker. He was like, it was quite funny.
So,
but yeah.
I mentioned like a venue a minute ago. I don't know if you ever went there in Cardiff. The kind of the toilet circuit gig was the Club Either Back.
Loads of times.
And that was
All
right. So did you see there?
No, we didn't see. I didn't see Muse there. I think they were playing at the bigger. Oh God, they call it something else now. It's called the Metro something or other. They call it something else. But I saw Muse there. I can't remember who I saw at E4 Bark now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It might have been someone really random that now is famous and I can't remember. Oh, I don't know. But yeah, it's a great club. Yeah, really great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lovely place. Amazing places like that. It's a brilliant city. So much going on all the time.
So, Rachel, what did you want from clubbing?
I wanted to listen to some really good music and have a little, dance with my friends. And I did used to drink quite a lot at uni because everybody did. And you recovered quite quickly. Now I barely drink at all because I have two toddlers and one of them will wake up in the night or something. And you're like, if you're hungover, that's just not a great place to be. So I think I did all my drinking then. And and I just used to love going out and with my friends and going to the kind of mainstream clubs and like the student union and stuff. They play lots of Robbie Williams and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'd always try and seek out the places that played the stuff I really liked. Because it was just much more fun and edgy and grungy. There'd always be sweat running down the walls at Metros. And it was before the smoking ban, it didn't smell too bad, but afterwards you could just smell sweat, and that was a bit grim. I think the cigarettes were like preferable to the stinky feet and sweat as well, because it wasn't a very big place.
It's so true. It's like I run a nightclub very similar to what you're saying, and that moment when that smoking ban come in, for a good couple of months, there was a very strange aroma in the air. It took a while, because it was constantly masked in cigarettes.
Like, does it never get cleaned? Yeah, you're like, no, it's exactly the same. It's just no one's smoking, so it's a different smell.
Absolutely. Okay, so for track six, Rachel, a favourite song from an artist from your home county.
So one of my favourite songwriters ever, I think Tom, my husband, refers to her as to people as the greatest songwriter you've probably never heard of, and that's Amy Wodge, who has written some of the most incredible songs in recent years, including Thinking Out Loud, she wrote with Ed Sheeran. So she grew up about 10 minutes from me, just like the next village down the road. I know her parents, they're absolutely lovely. And she's just like the most normal, hilarious, down-to-earth person. So she went to the kind of the rival secondary school to my secondary school. We'd never known each other then. She's a couple of years older than me. And then she ended up going and studying in Cardiff as well. So we've done very similar things, but had never actually properly met. But we know loads of people who know the same people. It's quite weird. But I met her at a couple of her gigs, and that was kind of before, because she'd worked with Ed Sheeran when he was really, really young, and they'd written together, and because he's quite a kind of caring, sharing person. He likes kind of honouring people that have helped him on his kind of journey to being such a massive success. So she went over to his house at some point, and they just sort of noodling around and wrote Thinking Out Loud, and it ended up going on the album, because the album was finished and done, and she listened to the album. She was like, oh, that's great. And then they just wrote Thinking Out Loud, just sitting on his sofa that night. And it's become one of the most, like, purchased songs of all time. And, like, the number one first dance for weddings, and bonkers.
So needless to say, Amy's probably not struggling with the mortgage at the moment.
No. And then it was amazing, because she then won a Grammy for it, which was just brilliant, because it was so well deserved. And then it's kind of opened the door for her to work with loads of other people. So she's been writing with all kinds of people. She worked with Camila Cabello, and she wrote a song called Parallel Hearts or something for Keith Urban. And she gets name checked now in things. Quite often people just say, oh, yeah, this Ed Sheeran wrote this song for me. But now they say Ed Sheeran and Amy Wodge and some other people wrote this song for me, which is really nice, because she's getting the recognition she deserves.
It's really weird you say that Ed Sheeran, you know, kind of credits where credit's due. And because I heard him on have you listened to him on Desert Island Discs, Ed Sheeran? And he plays a track by, they've done the JCB song. My dad's Bruce Lee. I'm Luke, I'm three, my dad's Bruce Lee. What was the band called? But basically that band was the first band that took him out on tour when he was a young artist. And he went, you might hear some influences when you play this record. And he put on the record by him, and it was just an Ed Sheeran record. And it was like, wow, that's unbelievable how much you've prestiged this artist here, which was a brave move of him to do that, to literally play something that he knew everybody was going to go, what? That's an itch, you know. It just sounds like, you know, you've based your career on this band, and but to then credit them and bring so much attention to them as well was, you know, he could quite easily have just gone, oh, I'm not going to play that because people are going to hear where I get some of my ideas from. Completely embraced it and credited them, and I thought that was a really, really cool thing.
Definitely.
Okay. It's driving me mad what that band was called. Oh gosh. That one hit, and it went straight to number one, the JCB song. I'm gonna Google it while
you've got to know, or haunt you.
Drive me up the wall,
Amy's exactly the same with her with how she does things, and she's so amazing at supporting young artists. And one of my students, Owen Francis Black, he's an amazing songwriter, and he and I co-write together quite often. And she had him open for her show in Somerset in December. And so, and that was just awesome. It was such a great thing for Owen, because he's ridiculously talented. He's just bonkers, insanely cool, and just this lovely kid. And she let him do that, and it was an amazing set. And he played some of the songs that he and I had written together, and I was like, oh my gosh, song I've written is being played at an Amy Wodge gig, which was amazing. And it's, I think, artists that are like that, that are really, really sharing and really, you know, generous with their time and their expertise and all those things, are, they just become even nicer people. You just think even more of them rather than just being talented. So yeah, I think Amy's just amazing.
Definitely. Well, that band was called Nizzloppy.
Oh yeah, I vaguely remember them now. Yeah, what a weird band name.
Yeah, so go and on Spotify and listen to Nizzloppy,
and you will be like,
"Oh my god, it's so obvious." Okay, last track, Rachel. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear. So it's your opportunity to turn someone onto a song that they've probably never heard before.
So, saying a Radiohead song, people will roll their eyes and be like, duh, we've heard of Radiohead. But my husband introduced this one to me. He's got everything that Radiohead ever made, ever. And he sang this in the car to me once. It was just, we were going to my cousin's wedding, and he just made up a harmony and just sang it along with Tom York, which was lush. And it's the song Like Spinning Plates, but it's the live version. So the one on the studio album, I'm not as keen on. It's quite unusual because it's another song backwards. So it's another song called I Will from Little Radiohead song played backwards. And then on the studio recording, Tom York learnt the lyrics backwards and sang it backwards, which is quite impressive. But then, you know, it's Tom York, so he is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then when they do it live, they play it on their instruments, so it just sounds like a normal track. And then he sings these incredible lyrics over the top, and it's just this amazingly weird and unearthly song. And because it's from an EP called I Might Be Wrong, live EP, a lot of people don't have it. And we played it to my almost 3-year-old daughter. She went, oh, Mummy, it's amazing. And so she quite often requests to have Like Spinning Plates on, so we can all have a little dance before bedtime. And so I like that she, you know, my 3-year-old is into Radiohead. She also loves Burn the Witch, which is quite scary. And she loves Burn the Witch. She loves all the strings on it. But yes, that's like a family favourite. But it's quite a weird song for our kids to like. But yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that live EP or mini album, whatever it was, that did seem to pass by quite quietly, which I was always surprised at, because it was probably arguably around the time of Radiohead's commercial peak, really. Like was that around the time of How Would a Thief, or maybe a bit before that?
I can't remember. It's all of it, everything. Mm. But I think it's around then. And it's, and they did some strange things, which is very them, where they'd put an album online and then just say, pay whatever you want. And so some people wouldn't pay anything for it, and some people paid 100 quid or something. So it might be one of those ones where they didn't do a lot of publicity.
But I think if you look at the stats on that, I think the lion's share of people paid a full price for that album.
Paid what they thought it was worth, and it's incredible.
Yeah, it was an amazing thing that they done that, and it was a very, I mean, needless to say, obviously Radiohead are very financially comfortable, I'm sure, at that point, and it was a great marketing spin as well, but I do think it was a brilliant thing to give, give the customer an opportunity to value it.
Yeah.
But I just wish that there was some sort of structure in place that would allow aspiring bands to do that. It's nice and easy to do that when you've got the money in the bank.
And the following.
I think in this this day and age, completely a global, massive following. And I just think it'd be nice if there was some way that the industry would, you know, allow something similar to that and help it kind of nurture exciting new talent. We'll finish on a question around that, Rachel, which is for somebody that's working with new talent and has worked within the industry for so many years, you know, spinning many different plates, no pun intended there. How do you see it, and how do you see the future for new and aspiring bands, singers, songwriters?
Oh, that's a tricky question, because things are changing massively and there isn't as much money in the industry now. So I think people need to almost be a brand as well as just, you know, being a really good songwriter or a really good singer. It's almost having a lot of other things around you so you can sort of capitalise on all that. And that's quite an odd thing, because I know some people hate that kind of thing and are just like, no, I'm just an artist, I don't want to try to sell trainers as well or whatever. But I think you've got to look at the bigger picture, because the world is changing, and it's unlikely anyone will get as much global success as like the Beatles or something, because the world's a completely different place. But there's definitely a place for it, you know, new and aspiring artists. It's just, it can be harder to kind of break ground, but a lot of it is about knowing the right people and making good choices, which can be really hard sometimes. And I always say to people, just do your absolute best, no matter what you're doing, even if you're playing in a complete toilet of a place, do your very best, because you just never know who might be watching, who might be listening to what you're doing, and you might just be exactly right for what they want. So yeah, I wish there was like a formula that could grant instant success to you know, aspiring artists, but unfortunately there isn't.
Yeah.
But I guess that's why the music industry is as it is. I think if you're enjoying
Absolutely.
Making music and it makes you happy, if that's the driving force, then the money and fame and success and great stuff is like a kind of bonus. But if music just makes you happy,
completely,
then you're going to have a lot of contentment in your life anyway. And then the other stuff should hopefully follow if you're talented enough.
Absolutely. So what's coming up for you in the immediate future, Rachel, and where can people find out about what you do?
So my website is rachelmasonmusic.com. I've got some stuff out on Spotify that I've written. I'm up for quite a few awards with the International Singer-Songwriters Association, so that's quite nice. 5 nominations, which really surprised me. I was like, really? Okay, cool.
Wonderful.
I was meant to be singing in Carnegie Hall a few weeks ago, but obviously that didn't happen because, you know, coronavirus. Oh. So that's a shame. And a lot of my work abroad's been postponed till next year, but that's fine, because it will still happen. And I'm busy writing for lots of different people and trying to support artists through the coronavirus, doing lots of writing, co-writing with them, and kind of getting their album up together so it's ready to go and record when we get out of lockdown, basically. So we're all set to go back and be creative.
Wonderful. Rachel, thank you so much for your time today, and I really appreciate you being the guinea pig for these virtual recordings. And we had some back and forth, and thankfully your husband was on hand to kind of get the audio set up your end.
He's my hero. I'm not very technical at all.
So I really appreciate your
pleasure.
Time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Lovely. Thank you, Rachel.
You.
There you have it. Thank you ever so much for listening. Rachel was a real joy. Thanks again to 76 for putting that audio together so cleverly, because when we was doing it visually as well on the Skype, there was a slight delay. And I think
76 done a wonderful job syncing up the audio there. So big thanks to him. And if you have a podcast and you're interested in getting it produced and mastered and such, then why not reach out to 76? You can find him on all of our social medias for Off the Beaten Track and Hardcore Listening, and he does a variety of podcasts, so he's your go-to guy. Thanks ever so much again to Rachel, and thanks mostly of all to you lot for listening and supporting this podcast. Like I said at the beginning, if you enjoy it, head over to Patreon and you can get loads more episodes over there. And if you're still thirsty for podcasts, go and check out www.podbiblemag.com, the podcast publication put together by myself, Scroobius Pip, and Adam Richardson. It's a one-stop shop for all things podcasting. You can read it online. You can buy print copies online. We've got a podcast as well each week. Me, Pip, and Adam speak to the kind of cream of the crop of the podcast universe, and we ask them to tell us all about their podcasts and the podcasts that they enjoy listening to. So that's out every week on all the usual places. So go and check out the Pod Bible podcast as well. Right, I'm going to take a breath, and I'm actually going to go and have a cup of tea. Have a lovely day. Stay safe in these bananas times we find ourselves in, and I can't wait to listen back to one of these episodes in a year's time and go, oh my God, yeah, that was when we was in that lockdown. That was a weird time, wasn't it? So stay safe, stay indoors, and yeah, hopefully it'll all be over and done with soon. Thanks again. Bye-bye. Oh yeah, sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes, so if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Me, Stu Whiffin.